Welcome to Common Sense Care, Parenting Gender Confused Children with Truth and Love. The gender industry's so-called affirmative care model is their one-size-fits-all answer for all children who struggle with their gender. But in no other area of education, psychology, or medicine is a one-size-fits-all answer best for every person. We believe that each child is an individual and should be given the care and support that's most appropriate for him or her. So welcome back. I'm Maria Kepler.
I'm Erin Brewer, and what are we talking about today, Maria?
We're talking about something interesting. Well, we always talk about something interesting. I think today we're talking about dual identities and something I call boomeranging. So we look at this ideology as a cult, and the more we've looked into it, I think we're in agreement that this is really behaving as a cult. One of the things that cults do is they break down your identity so that they can put on you the identity that they want you to have. That's pretty common to cults. And what we're seeing happening in the trans industry, the gender industry, with this cultic behavior is kids' true identities, who they actually are, is being subjugated, and this cult gender identity is being put on them. And as you see kids who have been sucked into this, it's almost cliche the way they dress, the way they behave. Girls, almost to a person, they've got the butch haircut. They've got, you know, maybe the colors, you know, the trans colors in their hair, t-shirts, sweatshirts, flannel shirts, baggy pants. I mean, they just look all the same. There's this cult identity that's being put on top of them, and that's not who they really are. Does that make sense?
Definitely. And I think you see this in other situations where people take on an identity, and oftentimes, you know, they have the sort of their true identity versus the identity that they're sort of grappling with. And there is this kind of battle between the two. And in this case, these kids, you know, maybe in their home, their true identity is the one that is, you know, most valued, that feels most comfortable. But then they go to school, they go out there in the world, and they're just bombarded with messages that their true identity isn't okay. And they need to take on this trans identity in order to be acceptable, in order to be, you know, to get affirmed, to get affection, to get attention. And so there is this, you know, this conflict, this internal conflict. It's almost a dissociation, I think, that one of the things that I've actually been having a discussion in my detransition group about how this ideology is actually encouraging a dissociation, which is actually a psychological disorder. So it's actually encouraging this state of unease, of psychological unhealthiness, because when you have this dissociation, it is like you're dealing with two different personalities, and it's not healthy. We want to be integrated. We want to, you know, we're healthiest and most functional when we're fully integrated and comfortable with ourselves.
Yeah. I think about this period in a kid's life, the tween, teen, the adolescent years. Identity formation is the primary task, mm-hmm. or one of the primary tasks of this age group, is figuring out who you are. And I remember when I was going through it as a teen, I tried on all these different personalities, all these different personas. And I tried being an athlete, which anybody who really knows me would find that really, really funny. But for a couple of years, I tried out for the basketball team. I ran track. I was okay at that. I'm pretty fast, but that's not my thing. And I learned pretty quickly, that's really not my thing. I've got one school picture, I think it's my freshman year of high school, that I've got this really short haircut and this jacket with I was trying on like a businesswoman. I look at that picture, I'm like, who in the world is that? But I was trying this different personality. And so it's very normal for kids this age to do that. What's not normal is for all of the adults around them to pick one of those and go, that's it, that's the one, and we're going to cement you there, and that's where you need to stay. stay.
Not only that, but we're going to encourage you to do things that are harmful to yourself in order to have that identity. And I think that's the crux of it, is that, you know, these other identities that kids try on aren't necessarily harmful. They're just sort of, you know, trying to see, you know, do I want to do this? Do I want to be this? How would it be if I acted like this? Whereas the trans identity very quickly gets, you know, put on this path towards medicalization. They're binding their breasts, which is damaging. They're, you know, talking about taking hormones. They're talking about surgeries. You know, these are all things that are dissociating them from themselves, that are saying who you are is fundamentally wrong. You have to become somebody else, which is not how identity formation works in when you're a teenager. In all other cases, it's you're going to become yourself. You're going to sort of blossom into who you are. Whereas the trans identity, even though they say they are encouraging people to be their authentic self, it's actually the opposite of what they're doing. They're saying who you are is not okay. You have to become someone completely different, so different that you have to damage yourself and medicalize yourself to be that other person.
Yeah, it's like living in opposite world, dealing with the trans gender industry jargon and their stuff, because yeah, so much of what they say is actually the opposite of what reality is. And being a gender non-conforming person, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with experimenting with that. I think a lot of people have said, you know, if my son just wants to have long hair and try wearing skirts, give it a try. That's fine. I'm not going to say you're actually a woman by doing that. And that's where I think that's where the identity really comes in the way that the gender industry is kind of forcing kids into these identities. Because they're saying, oh, it's not enough to just change your haircut and your clothes. We got to really change everything about you. Mm-hmm. And why would we tell a child that? Why would we do that? And what it sets up is this real identity, false identity dichotomy. Because as you said, when we're going through identity formation, the goal is to find out who we really are. What do I like? How do I want to present myself? How do I want other people to see me? And what is most comfortable for me in interacting with the world? And we want to achieve an honest, real identity, something that we can interact with the world on an ongoing basis and be authentic, our real selves, and that who we are in public is the same as who we are in private. Many of us struggle with that throughout our lives. You know, I want people to see me a certain way in public, so I'm going to put on a little bit different persona when I go out in public. I don't think that's healthy. I think we should try to be integrated, that who I am at home is the same as who I am out in the world. But that's an ongoing process, and we're all maturing and growing through that. But I think that would be the goal. But what's happening with these kids is they're being cemented in this one identity that the gender industry, the gender cult wants them to have. And what we find is this kind of tug of war going on, where your real self wants to come out and live. Even let's look at something as simple as, I really love the color blue. That's my favorite color. I love the color blue. But when I go to school, blue is not allowed. All the blue crayons have been taken away. All the blue markers have been taken away. There's no blue paints, nothing. I can go on like that for a while. I can color all my pictures using everything but blue. Okay, I guess the sky, I can't ever have a blue sky in my picture, so my sky will always be cloudy, or my sky will always have that green cast that comes before a tornado. You can do that for a little while, but over time, reality is reality. I need to have some blue skies. I love blue. I want to use blue in my stuff. And that need to be authentic, that need to be real, that need to be who I am, is going to continue to assert itself. And I think we see that happening with these trans kids. They've bought into this ideology that says who you really are is not okay. You need to become this person. And so they walk in that for a while. They can be very militant. They can be very determined. I think we're going to talk about recreating their histories in a future episode, but they will. They'll look back at their childhoods. I've always felt this way. I've never liked blue. I've never wanted blue. There's no blue skies. That doesn't exist. But over time, their real selves want to come out. They start engaging reality, and you find this tug of war going on. And that's what I've called boomeranging, because parents will start to have good interactions with their kids where they'll have a conversation and they'll bring up some of the logic. Hey, you know, look outside, the sky's blue right now. And the child's like, huh, yeah, you're right. The sky is blue. Huh, I'm not sure what to make of that. Parent feels really encouraged. Wow, I had a good conversation. We got to a common point. Child recognizes reality. And then an hour later, you know, a minute later, the next day, the child just flips right back into gender world. There's no such thing as blue. Blue doesn't exist. I hate blue. And the parent's going, what just happened? What just happened? And I think what's happening is those two identities are at war with one another. The real identity that loves blue, that knows she's a girl, that knows trans ideology is baloney, is coming up and saying, hey, I want to live, I want to express myself. And the trans identity is saying, no, that's not safe. You need to stay in the trans community. You've got to fall in line with our doctrine. And those two things are fighting with each other.
And the stakes are really high when you think about it. These kids, if they reject the trans identity, if they realize they've made a mistake, it's really hard. First of all, they have to admit that they made a mistake, and that's really hard. I know Sydney Wright has talked about this, that she, you know, she felt kind of silly that she had spent all this time saying, I'm trans. Ugh. And then having to say, oops, that's hard to do. Second of all, the threat of losing the community and all that affirmation, all that support, all that celebration is going to go away and likely turn on you. So it's this sense of, you know, it is this internal battle of strength almost. And it's very hard to find that internal strength to say, okay, I'm going to stand up for myself because I deserve it. And I'm going to reject that trans identity that's been put on me. That's incredibly hard to do, especially when you have teachers who have been encouraging it and doctors who have been encouraging it and friends who have been encouraging it. It's all over the TV. I mean, it's just everywhere you look. It seems like there's this celebration of trans identity. So in order for kids to sort of have that internal strength to say, nope, I'm going to accept who I am and I'm going to reject that ideology is incredibly hard.
It is. And these kids, for the most part, are pretty young. We're talking about teenagers and early 20s. And I was not that strong. My character was not that strong when I was that age to be able to stand up against the onslaught of people who were telling me, you know, no, you need to go this way. Well, no, I want to go this way. And I'm a fairly stubborn and independent person. But when I look back at that time in my life, it would have been very hard to go against the flow. And even now as an adult, I've lost friends over this. I've had family members unfriend me because they don't like my stance on this issue. And that's painful. But when I think about that happening to kids, to young people, it's awful to consider that they're going to lose their friends, their community. There's a lot of money that's put into this, and kids who come out as trans, if their parents are unsupportive, they can actually find glitter families who will help pay for their rent, who will help pay for their medicalization. And they will lose all of that. And like you said, they will get turned on. They will be vilified. They will be called names and told they were never trans in the first place.
And I think that that's where it's so important for families to understand this process so that, you know, if you have this happening in your home where you're like, gosh, you know, yesterday it seemed like she was totally coming out of this, but today she's like right back in there and maybe even more militant than before, that is part of the process of actually getting out of it. It sort of reminds me of, I don't know if you've seen those balls that bounce on each other.
Newton's cradle.
It kind of reminds me of that they sort of keep kind of bounce, and then they sort of will, you know, eventually settle down. But it does, you know, it seems like sometimes when you first introduce that crack in the ideology, they will actually, you know, go more militant initially than, you know, you'd think they'd be like, oh, right, I was wrong. But instead they go more militant. And I think that's really common, that kind of response that, and so as parents, you just have to be prepared for that this is, it's going to be a roller coaster. It's going to be this kind of back and forth for a while until your child settles into, you know, reestablishes their own identity.
That's a really good point. That can be so frustrating and so scary for parents to see that boomeranging or that extreme negative reaction. But I think it comes from fear. Fear is a huge motivator, and the trans industry, the gender industry, uses a lot of fear. Cults use fear to keep their recruits in line. And that is just an ample issue happening in the gender industry, is they put a lot of fear on these kids. People outside the gender industry aren't to be trusted. You're either an ally or an enemy. And so when the kids encounter something, a bit of logic, a question that contradicts what the gender industry is telling them, that's kind of terrifying, because they've gone all in on this. And again, there's the potential for humiliation. I really want to encourage parents, be as tender and as compassionate as you can, because your child needs to know that you are a safe place to land. They really need to know, if I give up this ideology and I give up this community and this whole cultural phenomenon, I need to know that I've got a safe place to land. I'm not going to land in a place where I'm mocked, where I'm rejected. Well, I've been telling you this for years. Don't come back to me now. I've got no use for you. Kids are hearing that. That is the wrong thing. Your child needs to know that you're going to say, honey, I get it. We're all susceptible. We're all susceptible to believing lies.
Yes.
I understand why this happened to you. I'm so glad that you're seeing the truth. Be that safe place for your child. But again, don't be surprised when there is that back and forth, when you start to have those positive interactions and you see the light at the end of the tunnel, you see hope, and it just swings back the other way. That's a good thing. That's actually a good thing, because you're entering that process of the child actually wrestling with the false identity and the true identity.
That's a really good point. As disheartening as it can feel, it means that there's starting to be some cracks. And it can be so hard to introduce those initial cracks, because so often these kids are just like, I am not looking, you know, I'm not seeing, I'm not hearing, I'm ignoring anything that challenges. And we're going to actually look at a video clip which talks about, he talks about how these identities are broken down, but he talks about thought stopping, closed circle logic, which is something that these cults do. I had to write it down because I'm not very good at remembering, but these are techniques that cults actually introduce to their membership. So thought stopping is, you know, they teach their memberships, like, you know, anytime somebody challenges you, just stop that thought. And so, you know, we see this in the trans ideology all the time, you know. So if you say, well, what do you mean by, do you mean like a transgender man, actually like a trans, somebody who's trans identified, actually like they're biologically become the opposite sex? Trans women are women. Like, you know, like there's no discussion. How dare you, you transphobe, like you're not allowed to ask that. And the other is the logical. Well, if they think they're a woman, then they're a woman. Well, what does that mean? Like, what does it mean to be a woman? If they think they're a woman, they're a woman. Like it's these, you know, these circular definitions. And so if you're able to introduce a crack into that, you know, into that, if you're able to sort of like let, you know, have your kid like get out of those patterns for just a minute and introduce sort of something that will put a crack in that ideology, it can be really scary because all of a sudden they're like, uh-oh. Like, and so, what have I done?
It's really scary what ifs.
Yeah.
Because, I want to back up just a little bit. I want to encourage parents. You're not going to get anywhere with your child introducing those things while you're in the midst of a conflict.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important to really work on your relationship so that when you're having a conversation about something completely unrelated, that's a peaceful, easy conversation and things are going well, that might be the time to go, hey, I want to switch gears for a second. I want to ask you about something I've been thinking about to get your opinion on it. And then put that question there, because the child is not in defense combative mode at that point. They're in probably closer to being their real self. And when you present that to them at a peaceful, happy, conflict-free time, it's more likely going to get in than if you're throwing these questions at them while you're in the middle of an argument. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to preface by saying that. But yes, this video, the guy in the video, it's not the most like professional, authoritative kind of video that you'll ever see. But I thought he did such a great job of encapsulating how cults work. And he's going to talk about how all cults do three things. They break down your true identity, introduce what they want you to believe, and then solidify you in the identity that they've put on top of you. And so I like the way he describes it. And I thought it was a very well organized argument.
Cult brainwashing, cult mind control is three steps only. We're all in frozen states for the most part. We have a fixed sense of identity. So the very first step is to unfreeze someone so that they become malleable. The second step is to give them a new ideology. And the third step is to freeze them again. Breaking someone's identity down is very important because people are frozen. How do you convince them of something new? You need to shatter their reality. And a really, really common way to do this that so many different culty groups use is telling you, listen, you've been lied to, the media has lied to you, the government has lied to you. That will break your identity down. Another common way that this is done of breaking someone's identity is something called attack therapy, which is like an intervention. A bunch of people will encircle you and tell you how you're destroying your own life. There's more subtle ways of breaking, like perceived as enlightenment. Some of the softer cults will be like, hey, so, you know, you've been asleep in a certain way and we're after an enlightenment, we're trying to wake up. Step two is when you give them a new reality, and this can be whatever you want it to be. Okay, so now that you know that you've been asleep and that you've been lied to, here's the real truth, here's the new ideology, here's the new thing to believe, here's the new reality, here's who you actually are, here's what the world story actually is, here's a radically new way to interpret everything that's happened and everything that will happen. Once they have broken you down or unfrozen you, gotten you to wake up and given you a new sense of identity, from here they will freeze you again, which is important. Because most people don't know how to unfreeze, and once you're frozen, you're basically, you're locked in the cult at that point.
So Maria, one of the things that I think that the trans industry does to really break down the identity is, first of all, they tell children that their gender, their sex, whatever, is assigned at birth, that people are just guessing. They don't really know. And we know that that's not true, but that's sort of one of the ways that they break it down. And then they tell kids that there's this sort of message that it's not okay to be cisgender. It's sort of used now as a pejorative, like, and for those who don't know what cisgender means, it's a term that has been coined by the transgender industry to mean someone who identifies with their biological sex, whatever that means. I don't really have an understanding what that means. I haven't really talked to anybody who understands what that means, but it's a pejorative. It's the idea that you're not transgender. Oh, you're one of those lucky ones who is actually cisgender. And I've seen some really negative comments about the concept of cisgender. And so kids are getting the message that it's not really okay to be cisgender. Like it's kind of lame at the very least. And people who are cisgender are kind of oppressive, they're kind of mean, they're transphobic. And so there is this message that you're really not okay if you're cisgender, that you're part of the oppressors, that you're part of the patriarchy, you're part of that horrible, negativity that's marginalizing these people. And so really the only way to be okay is to be transgender. And that can be, you can be, oh my gosh, there's so many different identities. I actually have this list that is just absurd. It's like 90 different ways in which you can identify that's not cisgender.
Okay. There's as many genders as there are people.
Right.
Everybody has their own.
Exactly.
I can make up one. I'm macular trachea gender.
Exactly.
Well, that's valid.
Yeah, it's valid. And so that's how they start to sort of break down these kids' identity is they tell them they're not okay the way they are, that they're oppressive, and that they've been lied to, that they've been told that they're, male or female, and that that's not true, and that they have to decide what they really are. If they like have these certain behaviors, it probably means they're actually something else. Is this whole like ideology that sort of breaks down their understanding of what they've been taught all their lives. And that's sort of one of the techniques is to tell these kids they've been lied to, especially by their parents and by these silly doctors who just made these guess about what they were. And then they go in and they tell them, this is what you should believe. That this trans expansiveness, that you're, beautiful and authentic. And again, that the best way to achieve your true self is probably through damaging yourself and being medicalized. And then they solidify it. And that's something that is so important, that is different. There are lots of different philosophies, ideologies that sort of come in and challenge thinking. And actually, we do this on the show all the time. We're constantly challenging thinking. We're saying, what your kids are learning in the schools isn't really what you want them learning. But we're not solidifying the thoughts. We're saying, go out there and learn. We
Well,
want you to.
we talked about this a little bit before the video because you brought it up. You said, how is what we're watching in this video clip different from what we're doing? So we had to talk a little bit, and yeah, we're not going to try to tell you, this is the only thing you can look at, and it's also we're not trying to prevent you from looking at anything else. Quite the opposite. We would say, go look at everything that's out there and look at it all critically.
Yes.
Research what you're being told. Look at the studies that are being cited. Look at the methodologies and decide for yourself. So yeah, I agree with you about that.
Yeah, and that's what I think is really happening is these kids. So they've had this process happen. They've had their identities broken down. Then they've been told what they need to think, and then they've had that new identity frozen. And so, as a parent, what you're trying to do is to kind of break through that frozen identity and get back to that original identity. And that is where the challenge is. And that I think is where that boomerang process comes in, is that, you start to break down that identity. And it can be really scary because I actually have had a few times in my life where I've had this like major identity shift. And it can be really scary when you're like, oh, all of the things that I thought were true aren't true. I have to navigate that, and I have to sort of accept that I was deceived or that I had made a huge mistake. And I have to somehow resolve that and make sense of that. And it's incredibly scary. And it makes you feel very vulnerable because then you think, well, if I can make that big of a mistake, how do I know going forward I'm not going to do it again? How do I know what is real and what isn't real? And that is the biggest fear I have for these kids, is that they've already had that identity kind of shattered. They've already gone through that experience of realizing that they can be completely deceived. And it's going to be really hard for them to trust in the future. It's going to be really hard for them to trust themselves and to trust adults. And that makes them vulnerable to, first of all, to sort of having that, just living in fear, but also to being sucked into cults in the future. I mean, it just makes them generally more vulnerable. So part of the process of getting a kid out of this trans ideology is really helping them to build up a strong identity. Kind of, they can't really ever go back to who they were prior to this. They have to sort of integrate what happened and come out as a new person, but a new person who's been through a lot.
I think about that line that Frodo says near the end of Lord of the Rings, that the trilogy, when he goes back to the Shire. I can't remember the quote, but it's like, you realize after everything that you've been through, you can't go back again. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit heartbreaking. And I'll admit there are things that I've learned and seen in the last several years of dealing with this that I wish I could unsee and I wish I could unlearn. There's a lot of things that are heartbreaking. But you're right that we integrate those things into who we are to become more realistic about the world, to be stronger people, to serve others. You know, what you've gone through, you can use to help other people who are a little bit further back on the path than you are. But I want to go back into identity a little bit too. One of the things that we need to recognize, and I think especially in the United States, we're very bad at recognizing this because we're a very individualistic society. We think, you know, my pursuit of happiness, that's the ultimate goal. Mm-hmm. But we are not individuals as islands. We are sons. We are daughters. We are aunts and uncles. Mm-hmm. We have a family history. We have connections to friends. We have connections to, we're connected in so many ways. And that is a part of our identity. That's a very important part of who we are, where we came from. I have an ancestry that's largely German. And I was reading the book Thief, and it's set in Germany during World War II. And I'm listening to the way these characters are talking to each other, like, oh my gosh, that's my aunts. My aunts sound exactly like that. And it was cool to me to recognize that's part of my ancestry is where I come from. One of the insidious things that the gender industry does is it tries to cut all of those connections off of a child. The term dead naming is so insidious because that really captures what they are doing. They're trying to kill that child's identity. They're trying to cut that child off from the family. If your parents don't 100% agree with this, cut them off. And I've talked to so many parents who've said, we did everything the child wanted. We agreed with the names. We agreed, you know, and the child still cuts them off. It's never enough. It's never enough. It's a very narcissistic ideology. So the trans industry wants to cut these kids off so they're no longer sons and daughters. They're no longer brothers and sisters. They're no longer aunts and uncles. They're no longer connected to who they were. They're now just fodder for the gender industry's medicalization machine, because that's the goal. That is the goal, is to make money off of these children for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I think that as you were saying that, it's just so powerful because all of those things that you were talking about, all those identities, mother, brother, sister, aunt, those are all identities based on our sex. That is what this industry is trying to subvert. And it is so sad because those identities are so important, you know, being somebody's mother, being somebody's daughter, being somebody's sister. Those aren't just sort of vague identities. Those are actual, empirical. They're actually real. They're actually something that you can, you know, biologically trace. They're inherent, I guess. You know, they're not just something that we sort of just say, oh, I'm going to believe this or I'm going to believe this. And I think that that's something that's really disturbing, is that One of the ways you make somebody crazy is that you tell them that reality isn't true anymore. And that's what's happening now, is that they're breaking down reality for these kids. And that makes them, again, that makes them very accessible to the gender industry that is using them to make money. And it makes me so sad, because I was just this morning looking at, there's a new company that's come out with a, you know, LGBTQAI++ product that has the flag on it. And it just, I just got this yearning for the good old days where I could look at a rainbow flag and feel good, which, you know, 5 years ago, I actually used to fly a rainbow flag because I felt good about it, because I thought it was representing all of us. I thought it was, you know, about loving people and inclusivity. And now I see a rainbow flag and all I can think about is girls who've had their breasts cut off and children who have been retarded in their growth and development, and children who have been medicalized for life. And it makes me sick. And again, it just, this is so insidious that they have taken something as beautiful as a rainbow and are using it to subvert these children and make money off them. They are ransoming our children. And it's just, it's horrible to me that they're taking these symbols that are so beautiful. And, you know, of course, when most kids see a rainbow, you're always, you know, rainbows are cool. I remember as a kid looking through a prism and seeing rainbows and, you know, looking up in the sky and seeing rainbows. And, you know, now whenever I see rainbow, even when I go out and see one in the sky, I just get this like, this sadness for all the children who are being damaged by this industry. It's just so insidious. And so, again, that's, you know, part of that push pull that happens, that, you know, at some point, hopefully we'll get back to sanity where we can look at rainbows again and not have that sadness. But right now, I think, you know, for these kids, you know, that's part of their identity, is this rainbow and the trans flag. And it's all so beautiful and wonderful. And it's almost like a drug for them. They get, you know, endorphins because they're being fed all this ideology and told how wonderful they are and how loved they are. But we know that at the bottom of it is this deep, dark pit that is going to lead them to self-harming and self-hatred.
Yeah, my husband and I were watching a news segment a couple of nights ago. It was by Vice News, and I can't remember the title of the segment, but it was about how corporate America has gotten into social justice issues. And all these businesses now are all about the social justice issues. But at the heart of it, it's all about the bottom line. They are going where the money is.
And the fact is that they're really targeting, they're going after a segment of the population upon whom they can make money. This is not a social justice issue. If it were, we would have, you know, Asperger flags, you know, for all these kids who have Asperger's. We'd have corporations putting a whole bunch of money in to help kids who have Asperger's. We'd have Asperger clubs, because we have lots of kids who have Asperger syndrome and are on the autism spectrum and who would really benefit from having clubs and organizations and parades and flags. And we're not seeing that for kids who have Asperger's or for kids who have, you know, other issues that aren't money makers. This is a targeted campaign to draw people in to make money off of them. I mean,
yeah. And so I think we've gotten a little far afield from identities and boomeranging, but we just really want everyone to understand this is not truly an identity issue. Mm-hmm. The gender industry really doesn't care about your child's identity, except that identity engineering puts kids on a path to medicalization. It makes them enthusiastic pursuers of drugs and surgeries. And that's why they're doing this identity engineering. There's this Native American legend that a lot of us have heard about. An older man and a younger man are talking about the struggle inside you to do the right things and to be a good person. And the older man said, it's like two dogs fighting inside of you to the death, the good and evil. And the younger man said, well, how do you make sure that which dog will win? And the older man said, the dog that you feed is mm-hmm. the one that will win. So as you're dealing with your children with the dual identities, their real identity and the fake one that the gender industry has put on them, feed their real identity. Mm-hmm. Encourage them in who they really are. Support them toward being who they were born to be. Starve the cult identity. Give it no quarter. Ask it questions. Challenge its assumptions. Provide that safe, encouraging, real place for your child's real identity. And don't have any quarter for the cult identity.
And I think if you as a parent can really almost see that your child is two different people, that they have, you know, their real identity and then this disassociative identity that you're dealing with. You know, it's not quite the same as multiple personality disorder, but it's similar, that they have this alternative identity that they're actually cultivating, that they're actually, you know, nourishing. They're actually trying to split into an alternative identity. If you can, you know, as a parent recognize that, I think it might be a little bit easier to deal with. You can say, okay, this isn't my kid right here. You know, this is that other one that I'm, you know, but then when your kid does come out, when you're interacting and all of a sudden you're like, there they are. Like you said, feed that, you know, spend time with them when they're being themselves, when you can tell that they're that person that you know is who you raised, you know, feed that, spend time with them, do things that you know that they enjoy, encourage it and let them know that you love them the way they are. That they don't have to become something else. They don't have to reject themselves. They're not inherently flawed. And really nurture who they are, who they were before they were introduced to this ideology.
Almost ended without answering these questions. Okay, we've got two.
Okay.
How should parents respond when children are boomeranging? Is it right to point out the contradictions in what they say or do? How in your face should parents be with ROGD kids? ROGD being rapid onset gender dysphoric kids.
Yeah, I always caution not to be super in your face because we know with teenagers it doesn't go over well. It's good, you know, you want to point things out, but do it gently. Again, these kids need to know that they have a safe harbor to come home to. And if you're in their face, you know, they're not going to feel like that. I think just gently pointing things out is really a good way to do that. Sometimes it also is helpful to have other people, not parents, point it out, you know, family, friends, maybe siblings can do it. I think that is helpful. And when they are sort of, when they're not in that sort of alternate identity, that's, I think, a better time to say, you know, it's interesting because I felt like we were really having a connection, but then yesterday you were, you know, what was that about? You know, maybe just ask them like that. And questions, again, questions, gentle questioning. What do you think, Maria?
I think that's great advice. Yeah, I think that's great advice. One complaint I hear from kids who've detransitioned and adults who've detransitioned is that during the transition time, their parents talked about nothing else but the gender stuff. It was just a constant. And that's understandable because as parents, we want our kids to be healthy. And when we're in a crisis, which this is a crisis for a family, it's very easy to let everything become about that crisis issue. So I would just additionally encourage, try not to make everything all the time about the gender issue. If you can, when your kids are in their healthy, true identities, as you said, Erin, spend time. If they like to go fishing, go fishing. If they like to cook, cook. Do those relationship strengthening things. And if you do need to address something about the gender, try to pick your time really carefully and choose your words carefully and try to present it as a question, present it as a, I don't understand this. I need you to help me understand it. As opposed to, well, while things are going good, I'm going to tell you all the things you're doing wrong. Because that'll end your happy time really, really quickly.
Yeah, sure will.
Okay, we've got one more question. I think we've actually addressed this in the episode. How do we as parents help kids recover their true identities and abandon this cult identity?
Yeah, again, I think just spending time with them, reinforcing those things. You know, ultimately, deep down, the kids know who they are. It's just, and I would, again, encourage people to get your book, Maria. You have such good techniques in there for helping to bring kids out of this.
So that book came from you and all the things that you've taught me and that I've learned from the hundreds and hundreds of parents I've talked to.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, it's again, just to recognize that this is a disassociative identity that has been created. It's a false identity, but that these, you know, ultimately it is going to be really scary for the kids to come out of that. So help them, you know, sort of, you know, imagine, you know, maybe like these kids have, you know, this is their armor around them. And if they take it off, they're going to be vulnerable and they need you to be there to stand beside them, to help them be strong.
That's a great image. And they may need you to stand in front of them.
Yes. Yeah.
I just happened to think of this before we end. We see a lot of parents who affirm this, who are out there in the public sphere, announcing that they've got a trans kid, they get TV shows, you know, they're really throwing their kids out into the public, kind of like gladiators in the Colosseum, for the spectators and the lions to tear apart. You do not hear that as much from the side that do not affirm the transgender identity, because these parents are the good parents who are protecting their children. They're not throwing their children out into the public sphere. They're not opening up their children's lives to public scrutiny. So I just want to add that your child may need you to be the gladiator standing in front of them to protect them from the culture, to say, you're not getting at my child. And you may need to take those slings and arrows from the culture in order to protect your child.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. And that's our job as parents. We need to do that. We need to be willing to, you know, sometimes sacrifice friends, sometimes sacrifice family, sacrifice relationships in order to protect our children. That's our responsibility. So what are we talking about next week, Maria?
Next week, we're going to talk a little bit more about identity. We're going to talk about the transgender identity and revising history. Parents see all the time with
and
this.
They are so confused by it. So I think that's going to be an important topic to discuss. And again, that's all part of this, you know, recreating an identity. So I'm glad we did this episode first to sort of lay some groundwork.
Me too. All right. Well, we'll see you next week.
All right. Thanks, Maria.
We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting your gender-confused kids with truth and love.